the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Bobby Golden. We're back again with all three entomologists, Don Cook, Angus Catchott, and Jeff Gore. So if you got boll worms to kill, don't call us for the next 30 minutes, but we're going to try to tell you how to manage them and pick up where we left off last week when we were talking about all the issues we've been having in BT2 cotton this year. So Angus, what have you seen this week different from last week?
Well, so, you know, when we talked about this a week or so ago, whenever it was, one of the things that we talked about was we were having a heavy egg lay. And we didn't know at the time how long that would last, but it seems to be going on. It seems to actually be increasing already in some areas. So this thing looks like it's going to be extended. We thought it could be, but it's definitely still picking up speed. At this point, there's been a lot of applications that's gone out, but now we're getting questions about what to do now.
All right, so when you talk about an egg lay and an egg lay being extended, how long does an egg lay generally last in a normal year?
Well, it just depends on what the host they're coming out of.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on moth emergence out of that previous host, in this case corn is a lot of it. You know, if you have moths emerging over an extended period of time, that egg lay is going to extend out.
All right, Jeff. So bottom line, we keep talking about extends, and we're not a Viagra commercial right now. So give me a time frame. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? What are we looking at?
Normally, a bollworm egg lay is going to last about 10 days to 2 weeks, and that's going to start low, peak in the middle of that time frame, and then tail off. But and we've seen that to some degree this year, but it's never gone back down to zero. We've gone from 5 to 10% egg lays up to 100% egg lays, back down to 10 to 15% egg lays, and now we seem to be back on that upswing again. So I think that's what we mean by an extended egg lay, is that we're getting continuous eggs over an extended period of time. So it's been probably close to a month now that we've been picking up bollworm eggs in cotton.
So it's never really over. It's just cyclic.
That's right.
Yeah, more or less. And I'll give you a good example of that. In 2011, I mean, I remember that one distinctly. That was when the river was really high and everybody was having all the trouble. That one was a minimum. That was about 12 weeks of continuous pressure in some cases. And I'd never seen anything like that at the time.
So when we're talking about budgets next week at MAIC, when we're down there, this is probably going to air while we're at MAIC. What is currently in our budget for spraying over BT2 cotton?
If I remember right, we did budget at least one application of a diamide, and then we added an incidental category to maybe catch that or some other pest. If I remember right, Don, Jeff, y'all might remember.
I remember something like that. It was kind of like one specific for bollworm, and then one that was an as needed, that whether it was plant bugs or spider mites or bollworm again.
All right. So where are we at in Mississippi today? You said this has been going on a month. How many oversprays have we made to date in general, if I'm a cotton farmer in Mississippi?
Well, just to go back a little bit, you know, we all started getting calls about a month ago about these low egg lays of 5 to 10%. And based on what happened last year, we were getting a bunch of questions about whether or not to go ahead and trigger those sprays. And when that happened, we were trying to get people to hold off a little bit. And I think we were good to do that because of the way this egg lays played out. And at this point right now, because we didn't jump out there too early, is we're for the most part at one application right now and about to get into that second application. Or some people are already have made that second application.
So as of July 20th, we haven't blown the budget yet, is what you're telling me.
Well, I think that depends on, who you talk to, because these things are expensive. And we was hoping, you never hope that you're going to do this. But I would say if you really looked at the things that we've talked about the last couple of years, we knew we were going to be in this situation. We just didn't know to what extent.
Yeah, and I think, the best thing that we can hope for in the two gene technologies, and what our goal is to maintain that, or at least not go over that two applications with the diamides. We would love to only make one, but I think the way things are playing out this year, a lot of our acres are going to get at least two applications.
maybe three in some instances.
We're hoping not. There was some several situations where they had three applications last year, and we really don't want to get into that.
One of the things that's kind of changing that possibly for this year is this crop is fast. It's moving incredibly fast, and we're ahead of schedule. And we got some cotton right now that's blooming out the top, and we got a lot that's approaching, you know, note above white flower five. So that in and of itself is going to limit that third application on a lot of acres, we're hoping.
Okay, so, yeah, I come back from Memphis last night and driving through North Mississippi, especially the non-irrigated acres, you could tell it already started cutting out, and there's some around here that I've seen do the same thing. So we're basically in a race to cut out you're telling me.
I think a key to that is that, you know, the thing we want to talk about, and we try not to talk about this too much, but we do have some specific termination dates for terminating insecticides. And it's really based on note above white flower counts. And, you know, from all the cotton agronomy stuff that's been done, once we get beyond that note above white flower five, that's really our last money bowls that we're making at that point in the crop. So it's important to remember that once those blooms move to the top of the plant and we're looking at cutout, at that point, we don't want to be spending a whole bunch of money to protect a very small percentage of what's eventually going to end up into the picker basket.
So let's not make a prophylactic spray on a rock that's going to bounce around in the chute.
Well, that's right. And so what we've always told people, and we feel really good about these numbers, is when we get about 350 heat units past note above white flower five, we can terminate insecticides. Now, the problem this year, what it's going to be, and by the way, that works out on average temperatures about 2 weeks after note above white flower five. But with these, you know, these fruit in the top of that plant, that does not mean a bollworm cannot get in there. And with these egg lays, that means we're going to see some damage in the top of the plant. What that does mean is we have never, or anybody has never been able to show any kind of yield protection from treating at that point, because those are small, knotty bowls, and they don't really contribute to yield that much. You're still going to see some damage, and that's hard for some people to swallow, but it is not economic to chase those worms when you're starting to flower out the top of that plant.
Yeah, and at this point in the year, we've done a really good job of protecting fruit. We've done really good on plant bugs. I think we were right on time on those early bollworm applications, and so we're sitting with a really good crop right now and a really good fruit load in this crop, which is going to make those bolls in the top of the plant even less important.
In the past, folks would make those applications prior to BT cotton to keep them from going down the plant into bolls that were more valuable.
So y'all are talked a lot over the last 2 to 3 weeks about bollworms and BT, and Don just mentioned that in the past, prior to BT, that's what we did. So BT is still working for us. It's just not as good as it was, and that's the message you want to get across, right?
Well, I mean, BT still has some activity, but it's the probability of a large percentage of those eggs actually hatching, making it into fruit and causing damage is much higher than it ever has been before. And every year that's getting worse and worse. So it does have some activity, yes. But I'll give you a good example. I had a consultant call me the other day. He had a pretty good egg lay, maybe 30, 40% egg lay. Told the guy to spray it, and for whatever reason, he couldn't get around. Anyway, 5 days, 6 days later, the guy had never sprayed the field. And then he went out and looked at it and was running 35 to 40% live three-day-old worms. So in that situation, the BT did not work at all. But there's probably a spot or two that, yeah, you're going to get some control.
All right. So, you know, we've talked about this, like I said earlier, for 3 weeks. And I've failed to ask the question, and shame on me. Y'all talk about egg lay, and 20%, 30%, 5%. What does that mean?
20% egg lays, you look at, say, 100 plants, 20 of them have eggs. That's the way I interpret it.
Yeah, or if you're focusing on just fruit, you look at 100 fruit structures and 20 of them have, you know, have eggs on them.
Is that 100 individual fruiting structures in 2 foot or stops, or how, you know, where's, y'all are big on thresholds and stuff. So how does this factor in? If I'm scouting a cotton field, you know, I'm not an entomologist. For a lot of listeners out there might not be entomologists and interested in this. So kind of take me through how Angus Catchite walks through a field and determines that it's 30% egg lay.
So I'm looking in terminals. I'm always going to look in terminals, but I'm putting my focus on bloom tags. And everybody I talk to on the phone, all these consultants, and when I'm talking to them, when my phone's ringing off the hook, I can hear them pulling bloom tags because they're all walking through fields trying to talk to me. But we're pulling bloom tags, and we're looking at those bloom tags. We're putting a lot of emphasis on bloom tags. But, yes, I still like to look in the terminals because, like we mentioned last week, you know, some of the work that we've done, and they're easier to find in the terminal. So I like, you know, you can miss them on a bloom tag, especially old as my dang eyes are. And so I'm looking in terminals and bloom tags.
So you're telling me you got readers in those coasters you're wearing?
I got readers in these coasters that I'm wearing right now. Yes, I do. Absolutely. But I think that the people that are out looking at cotton on a day-to-day basis, they completely understand this, but I get what you're getting if we got people that are listening to this that don't quite get it. I mean, that's...
Well, the reason I say that is, you know, a lot of our guys in Mississippi are trained entomologists walking fields, but in some other states, we might have some young consultants that are just a little bit unaware of what you're talking about. So,
kind of on those same lines, you know, field size kind of dictates sample size. Bigger the field, more samples you need to make an informed decision. So if you got, for example, a 20-acre field, you may go to 4 or 5 spots and look at 20 plants or 40 bloom tags, and, you know, the what you find is kind of averaged over all of that, and that's what you make the decision on in that field. But, you know, sample size is dictated by field size, you know, to get a reasonably accurate estimate of what's going on across that entire field.
Jeff, do you got anything to add to that?
Well, I think Don made a great point that what our thresholds are based on is the average across a whole field, because we rarely see a 20% egg lay from one end of the field to the other. They're usually in spots. You'll hit a hot spot where you got 40% eggs and maybe 2 spots where you got 10% eggs. So it's important to remember when that overall average for the whole field averages up to that threshold is what's important.
Without getting too in-depth in this, you know, insect distribution is clumped. But, you know, that's just the way it works. And when it gets uniform, that means you got a buttload everywhere. So generally, you know, on the front end of this, you have pockets where you have high infestations, other areas with low, and it kind of, that's where you average it out. When it gets uniform, that means you have a lot. I mean, you should have done something already.
So let me go back and say something real quick. We're talking about these egg lays and all of this, but we've never really, I don't think, keyed in yet to kind of give anybody listening to this an idea of really what we're dealing with as far as the pressure this year compared to what we've seen in the past. So I'll tell you, we're dealing with some heavy pressure that we're dealing with. We saw heavy pressure last year, and I'd say, Jeff, from the stuff I've looked at, I don't know if you and Don agree or not, but I think you do because we talk 3 or 4 times a day. But we're having some areas where we're dealing with some of the highest pressure that we've seen in a number of years. And talked to my counterpart, Dr. Gus Lorenz in Arkansas the other day. He said Southeast Arkansas, in his 40 years, he has not seen the egg lay that he's seeing now. So the pressure that we have right now is pretty intense in a lot of places.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's just starting to get up into Tennessee and up farther north from us as well.
The other part that we hadn't addressed, and, you know, we say 20%, say if we're looking at plants or terminals, that's 20% of the plants on average with at least one egg. I mean, you may have some that have 15 or 20 on it.
And I'm getting reports of, you know, bloom tags with 10 eggs on them. I mean, so there's some areas right now. I mean, we got a serious issue in some spots.
So at this point, Angus, you know, the question I'm getting a lot right now is 10 days out from 16 ounces of Prevathon. I'm running 60% eggs. Is it time to spray yet?
So we've worked through this, and admittedly, when we got into this a few years ago, thinking about egg thresholds, we hadn't thought it all the way through, and we hadn't counted on having continuous egg lays of 30 to even 100% over a 3 or 4 week period. But we've adjusted, and I feel like we're on the right track with some of the things that we're talking or recommending right now, and we're on the same page across state lines because we talk to our colleagues all the time. But to adapt. Now, keep in mind, the price of what we're having to use is what's dictating this decision. If all this was $5, we'd spray every 7 days when we had to spray. But we're talking about $20 for a lot of this stuff. So what we're telling people right now is that first diamide spray on an initial 20% egg, when they find 20% eggs, when they are in between that, if they are 7 days out after that application and they have live worms or another big egg lay and they feel like they got to do something, it's at a point that they got to do something. At that point, we're telling them to use a high rate of a pyrethroid and acephate. Now, we would never tell them to do that on the first app, but in the middle, we can't be spraying $20 diamides every 7 days. So we think that the little bit of activity in the Bogard 2 and the residual of the diamide is going to help that product work a little better than it would if it led off that deal. Now, if we get 12 to 14 days out and we get in a bad situation, that's when we're recommending another shot of a diamide.
So you're generally saying you're going to get 10 to 14 days residual out of a diamide?
That's right.
One of the keys to that is that we can, you know, from a control standpoint, we can pretty confidently talk about what product at what rate is going to give the best control. But there's so many variables that go into residual control that, you know, 20 ounces of Prevathon in one situation may give you 3 weeks residual control. In every other situation, it might only give you 2 weeks residual control. And so it's such an inexact science that we feel most comfortable just saying about that 10 to 14 days.
Okay, guys, so we never really talk about environment and bugs like we do with a lot of other things like diseases or weed control or fertilizer management. How is all these hot days and pop-up showers, how is that influencing your egg lay?
Well, I'm not saying it's going to have a big effect on the egg lay, but it may have a big effect on some of the treatments that are going out to some extent. But I'll tell you, these diamides are extremely rain fast, at least on other pests. I've had the opportunity to look at them behind some torrential downpours on accident, and they worked fantastic. Canopy structure, size of the crop, being, you know, the tips they're using, all of that's probably, in my mind, playing a much bigger role than some of the other stuff.
So we don't have to worry about getting a rain in an hour washing a high-dollar, $20 an acre product.
Well, you're not going to pin me down on that one either, but I can tell you, like in looper test, I've had an inch of rain 30 minutes after application when it was working good on loopers and zeroed them out. So that tells me, I mean, if you just make the parallel, it's very rain fast. Now, will that shorten the residual? Maybe so, probably so. But, I mean, I'm trying to turn the conversation this last week or two away from residual because we've pushed them, and we talked about this last week. We've pushed people to the higher rate for the most part. Well, they're thinking if we go to the higher rate, we're going to get 7 more days, and I am not comfortable saying that. What I'm saying, you're going to get a better initial kill than we experienced last year. You might see 7 more days residual, but I'm in no way standing behind residual on anybody's product given all the conditions that we've had. I mean, you just can't predict it, as Jeff said.
Yeah, so you're 7 to 12 days residual, but, man, let's jack up the rate so we can kill them all at once.
Or kill more of them.
And so what we're talking about it with that residual is all in cotton, but it's a little bit different in beans. And in this bollworm flight on any of the beans that are flowering right now seems to be the calls on beans are starting to pick up a lot.
Yes.
Right now.
The diamides are going to work really well on bollworms and beans. From some of the work we've done, bollworm larvae feed a lot more on leaves. They'll move back and forth between leaves and pods on beans where they're almost exclusively on, you know, squares and flowers and bowls and cotton. And I think that leaf, that foliage feeding helps with that control.
You know, one of the other things to think about too is that in beans especially, there's a lot of other products that will work really well on bollworms.
Yes.
What are those products?
Intrepid Edge has looked really well. Steward, even though it's relatively expensive, it works very well. It does not have the, here we're back to that term, residual. It doesn't seem to have the residual that the other products do, but it, as far as, you know, initial kill, you know, 5 to 7 days, it looks really good. I haven't seen a lot of that in the system in a number of years. A lot of it's because of price.
One of the ones that's gaining a lot of traction for the first time in Mississippi is actually a virus made by Ag Bitech called Heligen. And there is a lot of that going out. And the scenario that we've been in over the last 10 days in beans really plays into its hand. For one, it's very inexpensive relative to a lot of other choices. But it's been a lot of education that we've had to do when people ask us about it, because this is not a scorched earth product, and it's a lot different than things than we've looked in the past. So I've had a ton of calls on this, just trying to have the conversation and explain what to expect and so forth. But there has been a lot of conversation around that product, and a lot of it is driven by price.
Yeah, and that's the key to that product, is it's going to be probably the cheapest option for bollworm control in soybeans.
That's right.
And you put it in the right situation, you know, smaller larvae, you know, not lower, I hate to use the term sub-threshold, but, you know, not outbreak levels. It tends to be its strong suit.
Yeah.
And it will actually, being a biological agent, it will move across the field, and you'll get, you know, secondary infections of subsequent larvae as well.
All right, guys, I've made it to the next farm, and we're running out of time, so y'all got any last thoughts?
Yeah, I want to go back to one real important thing that we've kind of danced around and we haven't hit on. Jeff mentioned that we're at the point now that we're getting to that 12, 14-day period behind a lot of these diamide applications. Well, those same fields now are still back well over threshold on eggs, a lot of them, and it's time for round two. So I want to talk just a minute about rate. I mentioned earlier a lot of this cotton is just, man, it's got some horsepower under it as far as how fast it's moving. And, I mean, it's racing to the end extremely fast. In this situation, if you're node above white flower 5 and you got a giant egg lay, you still got 2 weeks left. But I feel like you can probably, you know, we talked about these high rates, 20 ounces of Prevathon or 10 ounces of Besiege. I think we can, if you're in that situation, you can probably drop back down now to 14 of Prevathon and 7. So, I mean, that's about the only light in the tunnel that I can see right now that'll save some folks some money and still finish this thing on out.
The other thing that helps with that is those blooms are moving up the plant.
That's right.
And that's where the bollworms are going to be following those blooms. So
you get a little better coverage.
Yep, yep.
Well, I want to end this on a if we're at the end on a real positive note, because I'm telling you, my phone is rang off the hook this week from all the things that we've talked about, the messages that we've got out. And I appreciate all the people in Mississippi that tune in. They really do listen to some of the things we're saying. They adopt these practices. I feel like we are so much more ahead of the eight ball than we was last year. People have done these things, and yeah, we got a few larvae coming through, but we have got a heck of a crop with a very good fruit set right now, because they did do these things proactively and try some of the things that we've been telling them to do. And that's what we're sitting on right now, some super high fruit retention, and we're nearing the end. So that's a good thing.
All right, guys, well, you heard it from Angus himself. We're nearing the end. If Jeff and Don don't have anything else to add, we'll let y'all get down the road to the next field and keep counting bollworms. So y'all, like always, if you got any questions, y'all know our numbers. Give us a shout, and we'll get to you as quick as we can.
And y'all just keep hanging in there.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.